Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
round number 1,387.
I think.
I'm going to double check that. But either way, welcome as we get ready to sit down and get down with the chefs for 2+ hours of good food for thought, courtesy of your loving mad scientist here at Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia, Ricky Hampton and Mike Roberson in Detroit and Oakland, California, respectively. Thanks for having me on the African-American Athlete last night. It was a great show, very sobering, as we are 1 year and a day past the death of George Floyd. in addition, the Orlando Lebanon and Sonic Cheryl Jones in Philly, Pat Freeman and Mighty Oba handling things in Western New York as he handles his business with the Minor Football League in Rochester. And of course, he's still doing great guns with his book, The Art of the Interview, Book 1. And it's a pretty nice read, I have to say. Of course, the rest of the brothers will be checking in as they do. Right now, I got side by side with me, Radio Reggie out of Richmond, Virginia, and the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. Gentlemen, can you hear me?
Water in Buffalo. Woo or wah.
Woo or like wah.
Michael, Louis Ingram, and Reggie.
Yes, sir.
Austin. America has lost its damn mind. Again?
We know that. What happened?
Let me explain the theme.
Please.
This morning at 6:30 in the morning, a worker went into a transit authority building.
Okay.
Shot 7 people to death.
Yeah, in California, yeah.
Burned his house down.
Holy fuck.
Killed himself. Yeah.
Is this a subway station situation, G?
No, this is a transit depot.
Oh, okay, I got it. Wow.
Now, Michael and Reggie, this past week, the state of Texas, and 200 states.
Yep.
Are thinking about having people have guns.
I thought they passed it already.
Register.
Yeah.
No training.
Wow.
No ID. Are you
kidding
me?
Wild West.
Are you kidding me? And this guy walks into the office and shoots 8 people this morning. Get out of here!
Well, no, it's not, this is what they were stilting toward. Think about this. All right, we haven't heard from the NRA in a while. A lot of people think they've been neutered because, you know, they haven't raised a stink about anything because they really can't. Their argument's been literally shot down. But if you have a state like Texas where you can buy a licensed firearm or unlicensed,
mm-hmm.
apparently, and walk around
with
like
your
bad ass boy.
Yeah, open cash.
What's the difference?
Yeah. Okay, but see, Mike, this is the thing that I'm not talking about. Republicans have made sure that they have this so-called freedom, and they and the Heritage Foundation have marketed themselves where it's the un-American thing to go against what's happening as far as wear masks or freedom. And see, what the Democrat Party is not doing is getting their act together and giving people a reason why to go after these Republicans and fire them. That's the problem.
Reggie is exactly
they,
right. Because you have these Republicans.
Yeah, they are controlling the argument.
You have your Republicans that don't want to wear a mask, right? You go on an airplane. The airplane requires you to wear a mask.
That's right.
Now, a couple of days ago, I'm on the airplane without a mask. And the flight attendant said, you got to wear a mask, ma'am. The woman punched her in the mouth. The woman lost two teeth and she got a black eye.
Did they throw our ass off the plane and arrest him?
But Mike, here's the thing. When the Heritage Foundation is a group of Republicans, that they make sure everybody's in lockstep where they say the same thing on radio, TV, network, and media. Mm. And see, this is why you have a crazy-ass woman like Green.
That goes crazy.
Let me finish, Gary. I'm just saying is that when somebody like Green said, oh, I don't think we should take a statue of Hitler down because we need to stand there and read about the man, about what he did, but we shouldn't take the statue down. Well, guess what? His fucking statue won't be in Germany. It's like the number 88 won't be in Germany because it's Heil Hitler. It's the eighth letter of alphabet,
right,
which is eight. That shit don't fly in Germany. That's true.
Marjorie,
that was one way to try to
Marjorie
sit around now.
Steel Green is a grenade. You know what? Let me explain this. In the war, you have a grenade. When you pull the pin, you got 3 seconds to throw a grenade. Marjorie Taylor Green, the pin is already out. And how many times you gonna explode?
Too bad she doesn't self-implode, though, and blow her ass up with her toxic behind. We got Tony McClain in the mix as well. But gentlemen, the question I want to bring back to the table is, Gary talked about a shooting in Oakland, California. 8 are dead. Now they're looking for a bomb. You know, like, how the fuck is anybody supposed to go about their business knowing now, when you add that and the item that Reggie brought to the table about Texas and gun or lack of gun control, everybody and their mama's off their motherfucking mind. The atmosphere
I know how this is getting really quickly. All you gotta do is say every black guy gets a gun. I bet you ain't never did.
Well, you don't have to say it. It should be done. Give every brother a gun. You already know what happened in California. It happened everywhere else. But maybe people will leave other folks the fuck alone.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
there you go.
Listen, all I'm feeling from this is that there's more tension added to this. Now, they talk about shootings like they're annual events now and stuff. You notice the tone is not as somber when it comes to another shooting. It's more like, oh, here's another one, and then the copy is red.
You got numb to it. That's all it is.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, yes. Mm-hmm. Trying to numb you to it. And as these things happen with mainstream media, you know, they will still go down that list until they hit the desired one. Because back in the day, it used to be the suspects of black men. Now, it's gone from suspect to subject. The subject is, as Gary said, it's another shooting. Okay, who's involved? We know if there's nothing that speaks to the ethnicity of the situation, it's a fucking white guy. Exactly. But if it happens to be a brother or somebody who's the other, then they'll try to pull out every detail they can about his mama, his granny, everybody.
Question. Didn't Vice President Kamala Harris say that there was no racism and that the white man, the biggest terror of ever in the last 10 or 20 years? Now, did I miss something? Because according to her, there's no racism, but yet we keep seeing European male, especially the one that's the biggest terrorist. And why they don't do a study on a national level about the angry
white
man?
They don't have to do a study, Reggie.
They
already know.
Study about it.
They already know. All those things that benefit white supremacy, best believe they've already been done. That's for damn. Yeah. That's for damn sure.
I want documentation of it so we can go to the Geneva Convention. Then we can sue some people like Morris State Southern Poverty Law Center. That's how.
No, see what needs to be done now. What needs to be done now? I said this a couple years ago. You need to go against Smith & Wesson. You need to go against the bullet makers. You need to go against Wesson. All these gun makers, all these bullet makers. Okay, you want to do this?
Gary, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that, Gary, but it's not going to happen. Yeah, but see, that's just it. You can sue. What happened, Gary? Hold on. What happened then? You sued the tobacco makers, but so what? Because there were no funds that anybody could get anything from, even though they proved that smoking was bad for your health. This
but
would be the same kind of thing in my opinion.
You don't see smoking on TV anymore, do you?
No, you don't.
Unfortunately, it's been reduced to vaping, which is probably worse.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is worse.
They just changed the programming. Sorry, G. I got to get with Mike on this, man. I know where your heart is, Gary. But the bottom line is big money, and now with marijuana coming through, you ain't seen nothing yet.
But marijuana is still a form of smoking.
It still damages the young people, though, guys.
That's right. People go ahead and do they can get money from marijuana as an 18-year-old.
So, hey, Mike, I got to say this real quick. It'd be nice if y'all would leave my wizards alone, man. This ass whipping y'all give me, I'm not happy by it at all, Mike. You know, not Westbrook out the game, man. What more you want from me, Mike?
Look,
y'all said old style still in there.
I'm switching back to the Knicks, too.
I'm not speaking to the press.
Tony, is it fair to say with the strength of what the Knicks, the Nets, the Sixers, and Boston have done that East Coast flavor may be coming back this way?
Well, everybody keeps forgetting, with all the talk about the Knicks and the Nets and whatever, the team with the best record in the East resides in the cheesesteaks state.
That's true. I said this,
you know, mid-season. If it does come down to Philly and the Nets, you got to take Philly because they have the better coach.
Yeah. In this case, they finally do.
They were out-coached with that other asshole there. But with Doc Rivers, Doc has taught Simmons and Embiid to work together. There's a cohesion with them now that was never there during Brett Brown. And Philly won as many games as they did with talent. It was embarrassing. It was kind of like when they won the championship in spite of the fact that Billy Cunningham was the coach. You know, he was a great player, but he was a horrible
fucking coach. You know, Billy Cunningham looks like Red freaking Arbeck compared to Brett Brown at this point in time right now.
Folks, if you hear an explosion, you know what happened, okay? The LA Clippers have imploded, okay?
Yep, can't blame. Can't blame Doc Rivers for this one.
That's right.
Hey, guys, which is worse, Dominique Wilkins going to Buckhead and not getting a seat, or right now what's happening with the Clippers? Because for Dominique Wilkins to be in Atlanta and the restaurant said, well, you can't come here because you don't have a proper dress attire. And three European men coming with T-shirts, shorts, and tennis shoes, and they get a fucking seat. Unreal. Mm-hmm. Of course, they apologize now. They're like, oh, shit, that was Dominique Wilkins. He did put him on blast.
Reggie, what's so poisonous about that? Dominique Wilkins is a true prince of the city. He is part of Atlanta. You know, how can you not know what he looks like if nothing else?
Yep.
This is one of those cats you just open the doors for. And not because he's supposedly some celebrity. He has done good work in Atlanta. And these motherfuckers have a nerve to tell him.
You know, the South keeps on wanting to rise again, but the only thing they rise up in is in ignorance.
Thank you. I was working for the telephone company back in the 70s, and back then it was still Mom Bell. And for whatever reason, everybody wanted to move to Atlanta. And according to Mom Bell rules, if a job was in Atlanta, you could transfer to it. So I hollered up at a couple of my buddies down there, spent the weekend down there. And first, it was nice. You know, you see black people in roles of leadership, and it's all good. And almost like Africans, like, you didn't hear nobody saying N-word. But when we got to the restaurant, we got over to Buckhead, and there were about three, bunch of people in front of us. We get to the line, and the maitre d' is there, and this white couple's in front, and they said, can you guarantee my food will be served by white hands and cooked by white hands? And apparently the maitre d' had a relationship with food. He didn't flinch. He said, sir, this is an amazing restaurant. We're 4 stars, blah, blah, blah. And he said, that's not what I said. Can you guarantee that my food will be served and cooked by white hands? And he said, I'm sorry, sir, no. And he walked out and he glowered. I mean, he gave the hate stare big time to that man on the way out. And I was like, wait a minute. And all of a sudden, the whole vibe of Atlanta changed up for me. This was after Maynard Jackson and Too Busy to Hate and all that bullshit.
Yep, but you hear it right. That's where some of them crackers were. Stone Mountain and all those places right there. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The United States of America has agreed this is going way too far. Michael, this morning, when I woke up, I turned the TV on, right? And I knew the way they were talking about this guy, I knew what color he was.
They
didn't tell me anything. I knew where he was.
Exactly.
Because when a black man does this.
That's right. If it's not brought up immediately, you need to bring this back.
Hey, T-Mac, I know you're not speaking to the media, but your boys are trying to make a run.
I'm not speaking to the media.
That's right. Well, I tell you what, as a member of the media, you're used to being around celebrities.
It.
We got the professor, Fred Witt, in the mix. Now, professor,
you ain't got nothing to do with this.
You heard about it. You heard about what happened to Dominique Wilkins in Atlanta, where he was refused service in a restaurant, and they pretended that they didn't know who he was. Has that ever happened to you or yours or those you know of in North Kakalaki, where you are?
Not in recent years, because my understanding with the Wilkins situation was some kind of stupidity called a dress code for a restaurant, and we were talking about restaurants that's been closed for the last year, and they're worried about what somebody's doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was going to know about COVID-19, dude.
Here, we have these things called country clubs. Now, that may be a sticking point, but most of the restaurants and stuff in our area, I mean, they got little stuff like, okay, you can't come in without a shirt on.
No shoes, no service.
Don't like you to have flip-flops on or that kind of stuff. And there was something some time ago about this lady and something that church I was wearing or something of that sort, but we don't have, I mean, we know, you got to remember, I live in a military town where the average age is like 30, and out of the, say, 46,000 to 50,000 troops on post, most of them got 30 and under. So that's a large, I mean, that's a large clientele. And like I say, some of these places are so glad to be open. I mean, the biggest thing we have here now is a lot of places are still requiring masks on, you know, when you eat inside. But beyond that, I mean, this level of stupidity that y'all talking about, you know, we are basically so far. I mean, there's only a few places I'm going to go eat anyway, but still, there's not a lot of that here. But further south, there's some places that you can go in some of the larger cities that are, where you got older people like Asheville and Winston and Raleigh.
Michael,
we got people here that are, so many people here that are 30 and under, and you're talking about a soldier who may be a PFC, who may be 24 years of age, maybe 25 or but so he's going out, he's likely to have a girlfriend that's in that scene, you know, just out of college kind of age. We got three universities here. Well, actually, two universities here, which are out right now, but you're talking about people who are 22 and under in large numbers. So, you know, we don't have to put up with that kind of, stuff. And like I say, most places here are just getting to where they could even come close to 50% plus capacity in the last, what, month? So... they're just so glad to have people come in and buy a full meal, you know, and ask them to have water or soda or iced tea.
And Michael, my father is a United States Marine, correct?
Yep.
We were in New Orleans.
I know Pop wouldn't take that shit.
We were in New Orleans. We had to go up the stairs. I had to get out of my wheelchair up the stairs to get to the restaurant, right?
Wow.
We get all the way up to the top of the restaurant. The owner comes out and says, you know, we're going to the restaurant.
That's right.
Which of course, the response would be, well, I don't eat Negroes, so you better serve me something other than that.
So what's on the menu?
Hey, my dad looked him in the eye and said, why don't you tell me that kind of stuff.
Michael.
Yes.
Since you all are talking about Marines, by the time Marines served in the South Pacific, you know, they had, you know, you had your what do you call it, Pullman laws, where blacks had to go to the back of the bus or special cars on. Special cars on the train. Well, after Black Marines started coming back to Mumford Point, which is part of Camp Lejeune, and they started coming back in, and some of these white soldiers had been on the fire with them. When they got to D.C. and they started putting them on the special cars or in the back of the bus, or in some cases, they said, well, because the bus was cut, the black guys had to get off. The white police said, hell no. As a matter of fact, in a couple instances, they basically put the driver off and left him set aside.
Because
you're talking about guys who who are in transportation down there, some you know, somebody, some of them have to drive up with a big 2-ton truck. So, hey, put this sucker off and let him find his way, and they would pack in. But see,
most definitely. Listen, you know, I respect the clarity that comes with people understanding they've been through shit together, and now you need to give him his props. What bothers me most about this Dominique Slight is that we know he's not played in a long time. We know he's a Hall of Famer. Now, I'm not trying to give any kind of Yankee comparison with New York, but we have celebrities coming out of our ass. It ain't no big deal to see a celebrity doing what they do in New York. And the protocol for somebody like, if Dominique Williams, Wilkins, is in New York right now, and there's a line at the restaurant, he will go to the front. Not because he thinks he needs to. Somebody will tell him, Mr. Williams, please, there's a table here for you. You and your party, come on in. It's how they treat their own at home. How can anybody think that there's some flavor in Atlanta when they dogged one of their native sons the way they did? That's bullshit.
And Mike, those are the instances that we know of. This. You've got to know, unfortunately, because I'm sure the sad thing is I'm sure Michael Vick and Hank Aaron and other Atlanta luminaries have had to deal with it. I'm sure that Andrew Young and even the late mayor Jackson had to deal with that stuff.
That's right. You know they have.
Jackson definitely has. Matter of fact, Jackson.
Yes, boycotts work. But when somebody gets off their ass and says, all right, I'm not eating in this place anymore. It has no cachet. Fuck them. That's when shit starts building. It's been done before. I mean, Coca-Cola knows what time it is if somebody in Atlanta really wants the boycott. But putting the energy to do it, that's what matters.
Where's the All-Star game going to be?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right.
The reality here is we're not talking about realistically. We're not talking about Dominique Williams. Dominique Wilkins. Who is actually a native North Carolinian. But, you know, that's neither who nor what we're talking about here. We're talking about a pattern of blacks being mistreated. Because if they deny him, what do they say for you and me? If we show up.
There you go.
And see, most places like that, whether or not you deserve to be in there or not, if you can't afford it, you don't need to be there. Okay?
That's exactly right.
So, but I would venture to say in all likelihood, he can afford it.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
So,
I would say that with a wink and a nod.
And see, since he can't afford it, you know, I forget the young lady who is, she's a female comedian, and she talked about snobbery among people who work at some of these upper end high schools, that's
Tiffany Haddish.
Listen, let me tell you something. I'm shopping when you work in here. Now, who do you think got most, you or me? Because if you're working here and this ain't your store, hey, you just another employee. And sometimes that's the message you have to send. Because I can remember being in Applebee's one day in Chapel Hill. We were there for the high school basketball championship. We were starting the women's games, and we had like a 2.5 hour break. So we go to I think it was Applebee's. We went to, and me and the rest of the crew were there, and these people, including some black folks, kept walking past us. So eventually, you know, we were sitting up to the bar and we were waiting for the, and eventually they put us at a table. Well, by this time, we've already used up like 30-some minutes, and we'd always get going in. We're going to leave 30 minutes to get from this place back over to the arena.
Right.
Well, after about 45 minutes, nobody has bothered to take our order.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay. You know, we looked around, and one young lady came past, and she had not been out there before that we had seen. And we asked, well, was anybody ever going to take our order? And so we did send us a manager here, and we explained to him what the situation was. And we also explained that, okay, and since we have not been served so far, we figured we're not going to be served, and we're just going to go ahead and leave. But, you know, corporate will hear about this. Now, I personally never called because I thought it wasn't worth it. But, you know, this is a scenario that plays out. And, no, they didn't know who I was. The people with me were college students. But that was, what, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at one young lady she runs a company in Raleigh. And the other one is a principal somewhere in upper eastern North Carolina. So what if they were to go back to Chapel Hill now? Guess where they won't go to eat? Applebee's. Now, me personally, I think their food suck anyway, but that's another story for another time.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, have you heard a story about
I've heard a couple of stories about Naomi. What's the latest?
Okay, and Naomi Osaka said yesterday that she will not be doing any press conferences during the French Open.
All right.
And the reason why she puts it out plain and simple, you people were now. Step up, people, when they're down. I'm not playing that game.
I love Naomi.
Well, not
because
doing any press conferences in the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Naomi is a stealth bomber. See, they can't say this is an angry black woman, even though she is a black woman. But what Naomi does that I love, she makes her points
very clear.
And she's like, this is what I'm doing. Y'all deal with it. And she's not, you know, I mean, of course, she's like polite when she finishes a press conference after that. I'm sorry I had to whip her ass, but, you know, this is what I'm here to do. And she's not, you know, rude about it or anything like that. And, guys, if there's any ancillary sound like radio or TV, please turn it off or mute. What Naomi is doing best is she has made an imprint on the game already. I don't know how many Grand Slams she'll win, but they already know she's a force. And they'll want her around until Serena finally walks away. Then they'll go after her black ass. And I think because she is so liking of Serena and all her accomplishments, I think she sees that. She doesn't have to have game run down too. I think she understands fully what's going on. And I got to love that because whatever black they want to take out of her, she puts that black out in front. So y'all got to deal with it, her and her sister. So I love Naomi for what she's doing right now.
Absolutely.
I know you know it. Oh, boy, here we go.
Mm-hmm. If she starts doing a crip walk, though, y'all in trouble. You know where it's going. Oh, man. I love it, though. But, Gary, when we were last here, we were speculating on what was going to happen to the A's. Now, we know they're not going to be the Oakland A's very soon. Will they be the Las Vegas A's? Is that the hot rumor?
No, it's the hot rumor. The hot rumor is the Portland Oregon A's.
Portland? Whoa.
Yes.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, that's the latest
Hey, guys, I'm sorry. I know T ain't speaking to the media, man, but damn, y'all boys putting their ass whooping on right now. I know you ain't speaking to the media, man, but even LeBron James said, it's loud as hell in there, man. I mean, I think it's the 1980s with the Knicks, man. Which, by the way, Kyrie Irving, thank you for saying that he was called a nigger when they play against the Boston Celtics. And all of a sudden, all the people in Boston said, oh, how dare he say that? We had the first all five black teams on the Red Auerbach. Come on now, guys.
I'm liking this direction.
Hey, look, Mike, just because he took a shit in Bill Russell's house and he's still on the court with a shotgun, I mean, hey, you know. And Bill Russell told him, fuck y'all. I don't want y'all to do nothing as far as Iron Man.
My aunt lived in Boston on Blue Hill Avenue in Dorchester. Travis knows where that area is. And the attitude they had toward brothers and sisters was, and I was up there in the 60s and 70s, it was like, well, who are you? You know, and it was worse than that. They just simply ignore you because they don't like the fact that you're even there. But I like what Kyrie Irving is doing here. What Kyrie is doing, he's got everybody on point because he's got everything recorded. His press conferences. They're like, yeah, I dare you to say something, motherfuckers, and they don't. He is making them understand that there will be a price if you come out your mouth incorrect. And I don't find anything wrong with that at all. Allen Iverson, before he left, said the one place he really didn't want to play in was Indiana. They would call him nigga all the time there. And he really enjoyed beating Indiana.
And
more
Utah ain't that far behind either now. Don't forget Utah.
Yeah.
They ain't that far behind.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Utah showed
the
a couple
and,
years ago.
And the NBC, the NBC or D&D, whatever you want to call it, they want one of those teams to be either in Utah or Utah or Denver. They want one of those teams in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if these current series hold up the way they are, they ain't gonna get none of them.
I knew that's right.
It's early because the only thing is because they're dragging this first round. And I think the first round may end around July the 4th, possibly.
Are you happy with the quality of play? It looks like the NBA is really doing a good job here.
Look. If you can't watch the NBA this time of the year, you're just not an NBA fan, plain and simple. This is the best time of the year to watch the NBA.
You are not watching the NHL. You are crazy. Both.
I mean, it's both. Especially now.
But the third team overtime in the first round.
Yep.
The NHL is on fire.
Oh, by the way, Mike, penguins are practically fried chickens, too, by the way.
Oh, shit. Uh-oh.
Oh, Lord.
Well, you know what? The NHL has been doing this for the past five years.
Well, the NHL is getting better every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get tired sometimes of the NFL's predictability because we know they're trying to stage the game. But the NHL, they've just been playing. You know, if there is any kind of showmanship going on, we haven't seen it so finite and so defined since that goal situation with the Dallas, ding-ding Stars, and the Buffalo Sabres going to the Buffalo Sabres again. I love that. I can't get away with saying it once. But the National Hockey League, they've got so much parity going on right now. I mean, Winnipeg just iced Edmonton in four games, and they were four really good games. Vancouver and Calgary had a trade of goalies, and Vancouver comes from four goals down, whoop that ass, and defeat Calgary.
Hey. Pittsburgh chickens. Get it right, Gary. The chickens.
The chickens.
My favorite. Pittsburgh Penguins. My favorite white meat.
The other white meat.
Yeah, the frozen white meat.
Mike, you also got the Civil War. You got the Civil War going on with Toronto
and Montreal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're getting what they need. They're getting the matchup they need.
Is there somebody playing in the NHL besides Carolina Hurricanes and the
Nashville? Yeah. I hate to break it to your friend. There's at least a couple more teams in the league.
Yes.
But that series has been great too. That series has been great too.
Yeah. Tampa Bay
and Florida are lighting it up. But the kid Jordan Knight the other night was unreal with the saves he was making for Florida. He stood on his head and won that game for the Panthers. And this is what the NHL is building up to. 6 strong years of postseason play. And now when they get this new contract and they put their stuff on showcase, every team in the NHL will be geared up to play their best hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the playoffs, but for the whole season.
I guess TNT got their biggest coup today where they the great one is going to be doing studio analysis. Well, it's going to be they're building it up as him being sort of like the Charles Barkley of hockey. And I gotta say, please don't do that. If you really want people to watch,
I don't think they'll do that because you'll take it too seriously. But I do say this is a great idea for the American markets because even the most not influenced or affected hockey fans, wannabe fans, they know who Wayne Gretzky is. He's got name potential right there, so they'll pay attention to what he's saying. And that makes a difference in the American markets. In Canada, I mean, we got brothers on the air in Canada analyzing hockey, Kevin Weeks and Anthony Stewart, and they do a great job. But
I hope he gets picked up along the way here because with NBC's last hurrah, I'm hoping that he'll be I'm hoping that somebody will pick him up, whether it be locally or nationally.
It would be
because
smart.
Brother's very good.
Mm-hmm. But hockey has been cranking big time. And what say, Professor?
I said I'm in favor of more fights because I don't understand the rest of hockey.
Okay.
Imagine soccer with six. Hey, I tried.
I got a hospital, and all I could see was Baltimore Clipper hockey for 3 weeks. I learned all sides, all the
yep.
Got yourself a little.
It took me 3 or 4 weeks to do it, but it's every single night I watch the Baltimore Clipper game.
You got yourself a little tutorial, huh?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
But you know what? Baltimore is good like that because when the CFL Colts came to Baltimore, they actually did a half-hour show explaining the nuances and the differences between Canadian football and American football. And they averaged 37,000 people per home date in that season before they came over. And they would always, the announcer would go, 1st and 10 for your Baltimore CFL, and everybody in the crowd would say, Colts. I mean, they really hooked that shit up.
It was a nice. Well, and plus, they were playing at the old barnyard, Memorial Stadium.
Yeah.
It was this is a great time of the year in a sense because you've got the playoffs going on for whatever baseball fans that are left. You got the baseball season. And, you know, there's even football stuff with the mini camps and the drop back of whatever.
The Aaron Rodgers,
You know, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't care. If he plays, fine. If he doesn't, fine. I just, you know, it's the more and more I think about it, somebody at ESPN was trying to drum up something for the draft, and it blew up in their face. So now they have to keep trying to justify the story. I think he's going to, you know, his ass is going to be, well, his ass, his whole body, mind you, but his ass is going to be on the center of opening night for Green Bay.
Oh, yeah. You know he is.
Not because they be going out here. Out here with Garoppolo and
the kid that they drafted.
He could be at that team in North Carolina because they don't have a quarterback.
This is true.
You're right about that shit. But you know what? This has been a trend that's been happening for a while. First, Deshaun Watson says, I want to leave. And it was way before the massage shit came up. Now Julio Jones wants to leave Atlanta. So now we got star players saying, I'm tired of this shit. I need to move. Now, I don't know whether they'll move or not, but this is a clear strategy on the part of some of these players that they realize that they're not going to get what they want because they're either contractually tied or they can't see their way out anytime soon. Julio Jones, Julio, says he wants to win. And if he wants to win, he got to get out of there. He's already told the Falcons he wants to be traded. Now, normally you would grant that wish. Obviously, he's going to be like they're going to need like a first round to compensate, but they better do it while they can because you don't want a disgruntled player. Whether you're mad at management or mad at your money or whatever, a distracted player is more likely to get fucked up on the field. That's fact. If I'm worried about how much money I'm going to be getting and I'm doing a five and slant and Gary wants to run my ass over with his wheelchair, what's going to happen? They won't care about how much money I want then. My black ass will be on the injured list and I'll be a write-off. So these stars saying stuff, it does matter because just like with the Dominique situation, how are you going to have an Atlanta Falcons team without Julio Jones? You already know Matt Ryan ain't shit. And you know that even though he's got good receivers, Calvin Ridley and all that, Atlanta's not going anywhere until they get rid of that fool. So if Julio Jones wants to make a move, when you say that,
you got to follow through with it, son. You just didn't put
I'm
the energy into it.
I'm trying to say the point. But I say this much. Julio Jones wants out.
You got to follow through with it. Stay from your lawn.
That's not good for free agents who are thinking about coming to Atlanta. Well, if your star player's leaving, the fuck I want to go down there for? I want to win, too. And that's the thing that gets missed in these dialogues that these so-called journalists want to make. How hard are you trying to win? Everybody knows everybody's getting paid. Everybody's getting a cut of that TV money. Some of the star players, they already are making great money. But if you're a competitor, you want to win. And that competitive thing, that fire don't last for so long because next thing you know, you're 4 or 5 years older and your body ain't going to respond like it normally does.
It doesn't help that, and it doesn't help that he spent most of his years on the turf, so his body may be, you know,
that's
And the thing about it is, there's not too many, you know, even with this quote unquote poly turf or whatever they call it, it's still not grass.
Awful. Yeah. I had to walk on that shit once. They replaced the turf in my old high school, George Washington, with artificial turf. And you better be able to feel because everything came at you like a fucking bomb. I'm surprised that Manny Ramirez played as well as he did in those circumstances, but the turf is no joke. While I was covering the Eagles down this neck of the woods, I had a chance to talk to Mike Quick, and Quick told me Eagles took his knees. I mean, Veterans Stadium was fucking awful. It hurt to walk on that shit, let alone play on it.
Yeah.
And they
just
took his knee in a few seasons. He had to fall. They were going to do a number on it. And, of course, the Wendell Davis incident where the kid had his knee pads, his kneecaps go up into his thighs because of the sheer force of the turf not giving. That was just disgusting. That was like horror film shit.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. Yeah, that was like Joe Theismann gruesome stuff.
Oh yeah.
Go.
You must be talking about the Islanders, I guess.
Oh man.
Well,
what are you doing?
Well, let me bring this up, guys.
No cheering in the press box, please.
No, but let me bring this up. Josh Allen.
Act like you've been there before, T. Wait, you tell him, T.
No. I'm just hey. I'm here. I'm just here not to get flogged. That's all.
Well, Josh Allen has opened his mouth up as being an anti-vaxxer. So, of course, he's not wearing a mask. Now, this dickhead is going to go about his business and pretend that nothing's wrong because he's not wearing a mask. And we know everybody in all of the leagues, I don't know if it's mandatory, but everybody should be wearing masks for nothing else but to protect themselves from other people. But here's this asshole who thinks he's a leader saying that he doesn't want to wear a mask. He was interviewed and basically came up with a lot of I don't knows and does and all this other shit. But
typical.
He wouldn't confront he wouldn't confront the reality like, okay, I gotta wear a mask.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
They have had some very beautiful funeral services, or they're waiting to have some very beautiful funeral services for people who wearing masks. I give you sample number one, that minister down there in Louisiana, who's hug my congregation, and they had like 9 or 10 funerals besides his in that same church.
Funeral palooza.
That's right.
And you know, the sad thing was so many of the people that he was, quote, hugging and that was hugging him were right. I mean, you know, like Josh Allen, other than being a sorry quarterback, he's also he's young and in pretty good shape and all that kind of stuff. But see, what people forget about this whole pandemic thing is this situation, this virus attacks you where you're weak. It doesn't matter
what your overall condition
attacks you in specific weak points. So, I mean, for those people, I mean, like here locally, if you're going to ride the bus, you're going to go in public buildings, and even at ball games, because I was watching last week, I watched the Durham Bulls. In my side of North Carolina, the Durham Bulls are more popular than they're AAA. They're more popular than the Hurricanes, the hockey team. They're more popular than that team that Michael Jordan owns in Charlotte. And they're probably close to as popular as the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers don't play during their season only overlap about 6 weeks.
6 months.
But, you know, as you go through people like him, you know, he's gonna have a sniffles one day, and then you're gonna go like, oh, I wonder what this is. And it's gonna come back. You know, he's gonna have to be isolated on his own, and all those other kind of things that's mandatory. So you know, sometimes it's like being Pennywise and dollar foolish.
It's true.
Yeah. and that's the thing. He's you know, look. Allegedly. Allegedly. But
see, his problem is, I mean, you know, he's probably setting up for the season, because unless he gets the new blocking, we won't have to worry about him too much.
Hello.
After the first two or three games, he's going to be on the shelf anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Look. Hey, Forrest Gump said it right. You know, can't fix stupid.
That's right. But see, he's supposed to be the on-field CEO. So how are you going to set an example by being ignorant of something that would benefit the whole team? Even if he didn't believe in it, he's like, well, you know what? This is what they're saying is policy. Let's follow it. Let's not worry about all the other shit. Let's go out and worry about winning the game on the field. He's showing his ignorance with that alone, which means he doesn't understand nuance. It ain't got nothing to do with being young. It just happens to do straight up with being dumb and an arrogant little piece of shit. And that's why the Bills may win a couple of games, but they're not going to do anything in the long run. The old joke used to be, how you spell Buffalo's football team? B-I-L-L-L-L-S. And there's going to be some more L's for Bills because they don't have the mental wherewithal to clear that hurdle and not just win on the field, but bring people to them, unless they have the draft loads of success from future drafts. Buffalo will be running on empty in two seasons.
See, Mike, one thing you gotta look at, when you look at all these drafts and all these kind of things, you know a team is only gonna get so good by the time they get all the players and all that stuff lined up.
Exactly.
And whatnot. Because what you have to deal with is, no matter how good your draft is, you don't get to draft all the great players. I mean,
you got
31 other teams out there that are doing the same thing you're doing, and you know, because
mm-hmm.
I remember some years ago, we've heard about this before. You have teams. Well, they should have took a quarterback. So and so was on the board. They should have took a quarterback. They got two quarterbacks. They don't need one.
Mm-hmm.
They need a defensive lineman. They need somebody to block for him. So
mm-hmm.
they need somebody to run the ball. They need somebody to catch the ball. But see, too many people think like fans do, and what you end up with is you got a team that's loaded with certain kind of talent, but then when it comes to other positions, I mean, so what, so one of the things that always made the Steelers look good over the years is not because they have such great defensive backs. It's that their defensive back don't have to cover for 3 seconds because they've always had good linebackers, down linemen going back, going all the way back to the curtain.
You're right. Glenn Edwards made a living.
Same thing with that team down in Texas. They had,
mm-hmm.
They had great defensive linemen. That's why they could afford to have two white guys as the safeties.
That's right.
Because they didn't have to cover nobody. All they had to do was support the run. And they played man
mm-hmm.
outside. But you get people when you get organizations that think too much like fans, then you end up with a real mess on your hand because you start noticing, they can cover, but you can't cover all day. If you got a good defense, you don't have and think about it. One of the best pass rushes they had at one point in time was a defensive back, because that's how good they were, and they were always
mm-hmm.
have good outside linebackers who could cover people. But see, people who think like fans, they look at the fact that they can run the ball.
Uh-huh.
They could, but then back then none of their line. If you think about the Steelers, very few of their linemen could have gone to another team and played. But for the scheme they ran, they played to the strength of it. They trapped you all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you travel about twice early in the game, they're not coming inside. They're not going to do a hard flow on your behind.
Fred, they never made the distinction of understanding that. What are the results? Now, they always talk about teams having good drafts, but what are the results when a team is finally shaped around and it's execution on the field? Glenn Edwards, safety for the Steelers, made a living out of playing center field because he could shift over because he had protection on the other side. He had pressure up front, all of the things you just talked about. It was easy to get picks. He didn't get a lot of them. When he got them, he knew the ball was coming there because he was the one playing center field with that pressure that was up front. And Kansas City, similar thing. I mean, when they won the Super Bowl, they had the deepest secondary in the league. They had six guys who could start anywhere else. And that's what's missing. Who's going to be able to draft that next group of drafts, 2-3 years of consistent excellence, and getting the players to form their core and execute on the field? We haven't seen that yet.
And see, and the sad part about it is, Mike, you probably, you know, it may take another 100 years before you do that because everything is so offensive-oriented.
Yeah.
You know, when the, you know.
They've changed all the rules now. But, you know, I was trying to tell this friend of mine who is so hyped on Polamalu. I said, well, you know, Polamalu, all he's doing is, what's the guy's name from South Carolina State? Anyway.
Who? Donnie Shell.
Was doing what Polamalu was doing 20 years ago.
Yeah,
so,
he just hit harder.
And he was faster. But see, because if you know anything about body types, you know, Polamalu is an anomaly because most Samoans can't play defensive back because they're too thick.
You're right about that. Yep.
It don't matter how fast and all the agile they may be. Most of them are too thick to do it. Because I remember I coached a couple of guys when I was coaching for the Army. And, you know, they were just getting into this thing about body types and all this kind of thing. And see, when that year was the year after Terry Long had left the military to go to East Carolina, where he played for 4 years. Well, we had some Samoan guys who were soldiers who came out for the teams. And the smallest one, although he was like 5'11", but he weighed 255. And he was talking about playing linebacker, he ended up playing. Well, he actually ended up not being able to play because of his duty. He had some kind of profile from the military, but it would have been great to have him. But the couple of guys who actually played, both of them played line. Two played line, and then the other guy played linebacker. But, you know, they're agile as all get out, but you look at them cats, and, you know, you know up front, them cats don't play. But, you know, Polamalu was good, but, you know, and then Edwards, who preceded him, who he actually replaced, and these other guys that seen some HBCUs, they were really doing what they did in college.
Yeah.
Because in college, he played at South Carolina State. He played what we would call a rover back, which means he played both. If they had a passing situation, but see what was the scheme that the Steelers used was they took you out of your run and make you have to pass, which opened you up. And they had, you know,
that's the old monster man position.
You got a 6'4" 215 to 25 cornerback playing on the right. And remember, they only played one side. They didn't flip-flop at all.
Yeah. It seems like it's so simple, but so many people, so many organizations ignore it because they're dealing with black athletes. I mean, the fact that the Steelers got this great team together defensively wasn't lost on me because they would have won a Super Bowl with Joe Gillum quarterbacking, or Terry Hanratty Gillum back, or Hanratty or Bradshaw. They chose Bradshaw because they wanted the white guy in there, even though Gillum won the spot back in the day. But they were that loaded. I mean, from those drafts, what did they get, 14, 15 players out of it? You don't
that 74, that very, you know, the famous 74 draft when they got, like, basically it was like five Hall of Famers eventually out of that 74 draft.
Five Hall of Famers in one swoop, and none, and that's the best I can remember. I think, Swan was from Southern Cal, so he was from a big school. But I think the center was from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Lambert was from Kent State.
Mm-hmm.
One from South Carolina State. And who was
the fifth?
He was a free agent.
Stallworth was in that draft. Alabama A&M.
Stallworth was from Alabama A&M. Which at that time was a Division II school. Because they didn't go to Division I until 99. Robert Mathis was their first star player once they went to Division One. He was one of them. And they had a tackle who never panned out because he had some lower body problems. But, you know, when you go back and think about how good the drafts were, and it wasn't just the Steelers who had good drafts, because that's the team that's outside of Dallas. They did very well during that same time. Because think about it. They went to Langston University and got Hollywood Henderson. Langston, you know, we were talking the other week about some of the schools, and one of the things I think when I think about Langston, I'm still trying to figure out where they are. I mean, I knew somebody who used to work there, but, you know, they had a young lady who went in the who signed with one of the
WNBA team.
The WNBA this year. But see, there's no real newspapers in that area, so information on them is really hard to come by. But then there's some other schools in the SIAC just as bad.
So how are they going to fix this situation come later in the fall and they run all of this back? You know, I don't mean just kids playing. I mean kids getting the opportunity to get the full meal deal. If they are clever enough to find a way where they can earn a side hustle that puts a couple of bucks in their pocket, right on. You know, short of throwing games and shit. But obviously the NCAA is gearing up for this, and I know their compliance laws will be markedly different, but there'll be more nitpicking, I would think, looking for shit.
What's even worse is that the courts are basically giving them a year to, you know, quote unquote, get their act together, so to speak. That's the crazy part about it. But it's put it this way. I think at some, you know, it's going to be a slow death for them, because instead of, in a sense, trying to meet the kids halfway, they still want to, you know, crush, kill, destroy. And in the long run, it's going to wind up hurting you. So I always hearken back to something that DiMaggio said years ago. When the big contracts are going on, they said, you know, Joe, how much, you know, if you played for George Steinbrenner, you know, how much would you make? He basically said, I would go into a room with George and say, George, me and you about to become partners. And he was being facetious, mind you, but therein lies the problem. Because see, they're never going to look at these kids as partners.
Thank you.
They look at them as, you know, a means to an end. Yeah. And even
cotton.
And even cotton pickers make more than they do. And see, what I hate is that, you know, you got this whole thing, well, if, you know, they're going to be making all sorts of, you know, they're not asking for seven-figure salaries. When you realize, look, when you realize that the money that the quote-unquote five families make, they can afford to do, and they can afford to give these kids, especially if it's revenue-generating sports. Now, let's be fair. Depending on where you're at, the men's rugby team is not going to bring in the same amount of money as say the football. And in some instances, there's going to be women's teams that are going to be making just as much, if not more, than some there's going to be some instances where the women's sports are the revenue generator. And see, I think, you know, as much as it's a race issue as well, a lot of it is a gender thing too, because they're not, you know, them good old boys ain't going to want to buy into the whole fact that the women's basketball team may be helping the women, the football team.
In the University of Connecticut's instance, that's exactly right.
Oh,
the Connecticut women's basketball program is huge. And Connecticut's football program isn't. The fact that they get so much TV time, the games they play during the season, postseason, already a pedigree of championships.
It's shameful. It's shameful that UConn's football team gets as many national games as they get. Crazy, man. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely now. Look, all the women's game. You know, the women are on national TV. They have a contract with SNY. You know, the men. You know, were able to. Get back a little bit this year, but they're still not. You know, there's. You know, a lot of it now is just because of reputation more than anything else.
Quite honestly,
Bobby Hurley didn't do anything differently than Kevin Ollie. And last I checked, Kevin Ollie won a national championship. Now, you could say that he, tried to use the whole thing of, well, he used so-and-so's kids. Well, if that's the case, then how come UConn couldn't get out of the first round this year?
That's the issue I got with the HBCUs. See, why is it that we don't do a better job at upper administration getting these TV deals? There's a reason why the NEAC fell on their face when you had Hampton and the Harvey bolted first. He laid the groundwork for A&T, and then all of a sudden you had the Florida flight. See, again, man.
Can I take
it? When you got a conference some 30 or 40 years old, it's ridiculous not to have your own hotel deal, not to have your own airlines, not to have your own sponsorship. And it's pretty sad, man. And this is why a lot of kids say, the hell with HBCU, because of this.
I'll tell you what I'm thinking in regards to this. They are loving the fact that they can dictate to the HBCUs any way they want. They talk to them any way they want because they know they don't care. Obviously, they don't care enough because their argument would be, well, let's make our product attractive enough for everybody else to look at. They don't care.
Mike, something I've been saying for a long time is this. We've got to stop having football coaches as ADs, and we've got to stop having football coaches as commissioners and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, now, don't get me wrong, Dr. Thomas is a smart guy and a lot of other good things, but he's still old school. He's still Dr. McClellan at the SWAT office. I've watched several interviews with him. Some of them I watched more than once. But he has a business acumen that is far different from what some of these other guys have. And several other schools that have fairly new ADs in the SWAC, as well as the some of the other schools. They got guys who've been at the table. I know the AD at FAMU. He's been at the table when they talk to representatives from media from other conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he talked about was the fact, I think it was University of Memphis,
mm-hmm.
and how their conference was really, I mean, their conference numbers are not nearly what the SWAC or the even the SIAC is. I mean, you know, SIAC is Division II. And then the CIAA, I mean, you know, their numbers are great. And so why, and then the MEAC, why aren't they getting the deal? Because, I mean, it was just like our sermon a couple of weeks ago. You have not because you ask not. Because when this whole thing with Dion came up with the SWAC and football, well, what other football did you have to watch? You know, and see, my thinking is this. Everybody got all heated up because, well, you know, we're going to move from ESPN 14 to 13 down to 12, down to 4-5-1, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. But realistically, I watched the game on a feed, and I saw the same thing the ones who watch on ESPN saw. So I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, I know certain carriers, cable carriers or dish carriers carry certain, so many of those and some of them they don't. But at the same time, though, two things. One, it's not a big deal as I've tried to make it. The exposure was great, but then at the end of the day, look who was great. Cornell and the coach from Arkansas Pine Bluff, they played for the championship. The one that they said was one they said was so great. They were home, and like one of them was actually home, packing up to get ready to leave the conference. You know. But I know he wants to get closer to home, and I understand that. But you know, there still has to be that corporate business minded person in place to help change this. Because as long as we continue to depend on these guys who will take whatever is offered, we would never get more until we demand more. And I think we've reached a point now. But we can actually do that, especially at the Division I level. Division II?
I would hope so. I would hope so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's sad is, I want to say this without it being derogatory or whatever, but there's a for lack of a better word, there's a Chitlin Circuit mentality that goes on, and you got to go beyond that. You've got to.
Yep. I'm with you. You just spoke on the question I was going to ask you. Patrick Farrar's in the mix as well. Patrick, can you hear us?
Live and living code. What's up, guys?
How are you?
Oh, what's up, good, fam? That's good. What's up, fam?
So, Tony, let me ask you, because you worked at HBCU, you went through the process, you saw that. What did they do right, and what stuff did they struggle with overall, in your opinion?
Well, look. I'm biased. You know, look, I enjoyed the years that I was working for Winston. It was a high time there because the basketball and football teams were not just competing; they were winning championships. And even the women's basketball team under Deborah Clark, they were doing very well as well. One of the things I've always said, they were champions, but they were a competitive team, though. A very, very competitive team. The thing is, one of the things I think that gets taken for granted a lot, and I know it sounds like a broken record because I've said it a lot, how do you define yourself? Now, folks like Hampton and A&T, you know, they don't just identify themselves as just a football power or just a basketball power. You know, we've seen over the years how A&T's track team has, you know, been, you know, has been great on a national scale. We see where Hampton, while they, you know, the football has done well, but the men's and women's basketball has done well. Their track teams as well. And in other sports, you know, whether it be like, you know, swimming or others. I think the thing, you know, there's, and again, I don't, again, I don't want to beat it to death, but I go back to that whole Chitlin circuit mentality because, like Fred said, they don't, they're not, they literally, you know, let's be honest. The MEAC thought that they would shame Hampton when, you know, they thought that they would, you know, they figured that they would shame Hampton after they left. Mm-hmm. They never thought that, it was sort of like, it was sort of like the city of New York, the state of New York, in regards to Walter O'Malley. Oh, he won't leave. He won't leave.
Yeah.
He not only left, but he took the other. He took one of the other two. Just one of the other teams
team with
him. And that mentality, to a certain extent, is still there. Now, one of the good things is, like Fred said, you are starting to see more younger folks in prominent positions, and that's when these conferences will be able to take it to. Yeah, I look at, you know, I look at Miss McWilliams at the CIAA. Now she attended an HBCU, but she also worked at other institutions, other white institutions. But the thing about it is, she saw how they made their money.
There you go.
And that's the key.
Go.
And see, if you, you know, we always accuse the NCAA of those 1940 values while trying to cash them 2021 checks.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's still a lot of that prevalent in these HBCUs. It's in the individual schools, and to a certain extent, it's in some of the conferences. And look, I'm trying not to call, I'm trying not to call out the MEAC too much here, but see, here's the thing.
Shit, I will.
When Hampton left, they treated them sort of like how the NBA treated Tim McGonaghy. Oh, he's a lone wolf.
Yeah.
He's a lone wolf. He's the only guy that thinks like that. And
they
then all of
Dr.
a sudden Holland. The A&T, and then all of a sudden A&T left. And then all of a sudden A&M left. And then all of a sudden Cookman left. So, you know, let's put it this way. The fact that they literally did not see that coming speaks volumes. And again, this is not anything really personal against Commissioner Thomas, but he's going to have to bear the brunt of this, because instead of really trying to hit the problem head on, they tried to, in a sense, they tried to scapegoat them, and it's hurt them in the long run. Think of what Savannah State did. Now, Savannah State was making very good money in the MEAC and what have you, but their overall program suffered. So they basically said, you know what, we're going to take a step back, and we're going to make it so that when we do make the move to Division One, we will be ready. Now, you know, we saw what happened with FAMU years ago, and to be quite honest, and I don't know if you agree the same way, Fred, I think it took them damn near 10 years to really get back to where they were, and it paid off in the sense of them going to the SWAC. Now Winston, they took a step back, but again, they found out early on, you know what, this might not be the best move for us. We'll take a step back.
But here's the thing, T. The sad thing about it, and I'm sure Fred would agree with me, that we have disrespected the CIAA when it comes to our brand. And it's really sad. And that's why here in Richmond, Virginia, the Henrico County have already started reaching out to CIAA, where they're going to have track and field at Virginia State. And also they're going to have ladies softball from Virginia Union. But what they're laying the groundwork down is a 17,000-seat brand-new arena off of Interstate 95, which they're going to be putting a bid in for the CIAA in two to three years when it leaves Baltimore.
That's exactly the reason to work for. And you know what? I bet you the CIAA is probably coming to them too.
Oh, no, they've already got hat in hand because they got the emails flying. They've already set the groundwork. And as Dr. Cavell said, the cities have to put out bids in order to make it enticing. Just like the ACU baseball Hall of Fame going on. How in the handful you going to have an event if you can't even – because, Patrick, I know you know about this. You got to put a little sugar in there for them to look at it.
You know, I'm coming to conversation late. And I sent this about you about
HBCUs,
HBCU Black College Sports. Well, you know, something that happened this week, I hopefully you guys are mentioning it, that A&T got $181 million worth of donations.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, which leads to the one word that describes this whole situation. It's called vision.
There you go.
If you have vision,
was
you
that corporate money, Patrick, or was that because of the track program?
It's
been on national level.
No, that's because of the contributions that they've gotten. You know, one thing that Tony said that I had to learn when I left Bishop College and went to Ohio State, I saw a different way of doing things. Not that they were smarter, not that they had more intellect, but they were challenged by doing things differently in order to progress.
There you go.
I had to learn that there comes a time when a person can take it to a certain level, then you got to take it over to somebody else, got to take it over to take it to the next level. That's very difficult to do. There's a mindset that takes vision, the vision that is about propelling what you want to do moving forward. That can be difficult for a lot of people. I don't care, HBCU, it could be church, it could be any business. But if you ain't got vision, people with vision, all my years of working in corporate world and Wall Street, back doors of professional sports and in advertising and in television, one thing I know is people who do well, they got vision. If you ain't got that, you're going to be susceptible to a lot of stuff that keeps you right where you are.
And you also have to have sort of a humbleness too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not humbleness to the point where it's like where you're being a phony, so to speak. It's a humbleness of in a sense because, like you said, you know, I use Miss McWilliams as an example. Her going to the white schools didn't make her smarter. These schools that she dealt with. And these conferences that she – white conferences that she dealt with weren't smarter. But they did do things differently. Now, yes, in some instances, because they've got a couple more bucks, they can do a few things. But there's also the, you know, the quote-unquote mid-majors. See, I would love to see all four of the four black conferences take on the mindset of the mid-majors. Because the mid majors basically are like, no, we don't. You know, look, we are Division One, so to speak, but we carve our own niche.
Somewhere
along the way, the HBCUs lost that.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the way, they lost that, and I think that's why things have struggled the way they have been.
Tony, yeah. Let me throw one other thing in, Tony. By being in both kind of institutions, there's something else that you have to consider. And people, they talk about it, but they don't really push it much. When you go to one of these ones, like institutions like I went to at State or in Big Ten, there is a demand for you to get better. Not a suggestion.
Yes.
I think about it. Well, we're going to work on it. No, there is a demand. People who got cash who love the university more than their church, who are going to put their money on it, and they're going to demand certain things.
Yep.
I don't know
exactly
how much people are demanding it for you. And also the other part of this, you made a good point. You know, my dad, God rest his soul, told me something. He only had a fourth grade education, but he had a PhD in wisdom. And one of the things he said as I got older and he saw things that were doing, and I asked him questions about how come things will happen in certain ways, he said, son, sometimes you got to get them old folks out the way and let some new folks take over.
Yes.
You got to get some young folks in there who got vision, who knows what they, who, like the young lady said, who went to she was at an HBCU, but she went to different institutions and saw how they did things and modeled some of the stuff that she thinks that she can do to improve the lot of what you want to do. If you ain't thinking like that, like I say, you'll lack vision and you'll be right where you are.
Yeah. 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 And the thing about it is, it's not rocket science. And I know that that's a phrase that gets overused or what have you, but especially in this, because look, you could make the argument that, you know, for all the whatever that he gets, that Mr. Harvey is one of them old fogies. But the difference between him is he realizes, hey, I may think a certain way, but I may also I'm also looking to improve. Because see, his biggest crime is he's like one of these guys that Patrick talked about. He's looking to improve every day. And one of the he didn't come right out and say it, but the main reason why Hampton is in the Big South right now is because he didn't see any more growth in the MEAC. And that should be a slap in the face to every person in that
country. It was.
Thank you very much.
Well, at least it should be. You're right. That's the whole thing in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Somebody saw the future, and nobody was paying attention to what he was saying or seeing.
Because, the greatest thing, look, the MEAC just had its 50th birthday. Now, yes, it was in the middle of a damn pandemic, and I get it. I understand that. And there's always that, you know, and it's a tough damn go to try and push product in the middle of a goddamn pandemic. But that being said, the history, just the history alone, that should be, you know, I was watching the SWAC baseball tournament last week. There was one commercial where they were this is we are the SWAC. Now I know that commercial backwards and forwards now because between every break, they made it a point to push that on the digital network. That's something basic. That's like, you know, marketing 101. You know, whenever you watch those games back in the day, and even now, when they have the 30-second commercial on the schools who are playing, you know, if it's Del State versus FAMU at the half, in between the times where we can watch the Fighting 100, they're going to make sure that they give you 30 seconds on why Delaware State is bad, and they're gonna give you 30 seconds on why FAMU is bad, and then hopefully while they're doing all of that, they're trying to tell you, hey, the MEAC is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. And that's the thing.
And Tony, they've been doing that for the Big Ten for the last 10 years.
Oh my God! That was before they had the network.
The last 10 years. And you know something? Every school in the Big Ten, now Rutgers was the last one to come in, have to produce something that says something positive or monumentally important or significant about that school in 30 seconds. And they're going to show it during the game. They're going to show it to all on the NFL network, and they're going to show it during the games. If you don't think that ain't bringing some money in, you live in a la-la land. And the second thing, mm-hmm. And the second thing, Tony, is this. Now, I don't know if Fred or Reggie can tell him about this. Now, I know that the president of Hampton has huge money in Coca-Cola.
PepsiCo.
Oh, PepsiCo? Okay.
Dr. Harvey, because he was with, Dr. Harvey a couple of times when he was up here, and he hooked up with Julius Irvin in Philadelphia to do some stuff. Now, yeah. I'm saying if he's in the Big South for whatever reason, I can guarantee you, sure as I'm black and I'm sick here, he learned some things of how they produce and they market stuff that wove into that position, a decision to move to the Big South. Believe me.
Actually, he tried to go to the Colonial, but they told him you didn't have enough money because Delaware State, Delaware had like $35 or $40 million as sports endowment, and Hampton had $25 million. And also they said we was afraid about y'all recruiting certain athletes
get. And you know what? That's cool. Because see, now he can, you know, one of the things he can work on while they're in the Big South, build that kitty up, man.
He's retiring this year. This is last year. He's out of there.
I hope that he and his successor. Oh, he doesn't have a successor?
No, he got one, but we don't know if he's going to be athletic friendly like Harvey was.
Gentlemen.
Patrick, Mike, before you
finish, Mike, keep that thought. I must say this. In all the years, I did several things with the Urban Classic and Meadowlands before, you know, they cut it out. I must say this. I met Dr. Harvey a couple of times. I've been to his booth that they had in the Meadowlands for his people. I must say, he kept some fine women around him. But go, I can not digress.
Mm-hmm. I know that's right. But see, that's the problem. None of the HBCUs can say the word endowment.
Yes, sir.
The secret weapon.
That's
the secret weapon.
Something we got to look at here. Okay, first and foremost, actually Hampton's endowment is over $200 million because Dr. Harvey did one thing positive on all his years.
I stand corrected. Yeah, that's Hampton.
Money.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, secondly, in addition to the thing that Patrick just mentioned about him, trust me, I do agree. He had good eyes. But the third thing about Dr. Harvey, in addition to being able to raise money, I would venture to say he's one of the biggest assholes I've ever met with an education in my life. He always ranked real high, but I will never argue with his level of success. He was good at raising money. He kept Hampton in the news, in positive light. I still don't understand yachting. He raised the money to put it out there, and he did. He offered alternatives. But the other thing when it comes to too many HBCUs, and they still got that we just good little post school. You know, there I think there's like two, maybe three HBCUs. I think it's A&T, Sam, and Southern, I think, are the 10,000-plus HBCUs. A&T, Dr. Martin, blessed his heart. And I won't go back into how why I still hate him. But anyway, quiet as it's kept, you know, A&T does have a black billionaire who's part of the board, and they use her to help raise money, and their endowment is going significantly. That 180-something million is just a portion.
181 million,
That ain't bad.
Last week.
But see, that's just part of the bigger picture. Because you're out to raise the bridge. So that's the kind of thinking. But if anybody asks me, Dr. Martin got that kind of level-headed is because his parents went to Winston-Salem. He grew up across the road from I-40 from Winston-Salem State, and he spent 5 or 6 years as Chancellor Winston. So we grew that into him. So now he can go out and use the A&T, but that's okay. We'll take care of that in 3 years when we play it.
Fred, can I ask you a question, Fred? You and Wes know more than I do. And we talk about the overall aspect of how the HBCU should grow. Now, is there still a strong alignment with the administrations to churches?
In some cases, yes. That is one of the big. Let me tell you something about that, because I've done some research on that.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are great, but the connection, you got the educated Negroes in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Reggie, yep. In the head. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me sit up and show my
right
back.
In the head.
But you were talking, I mean, okay, the Amy Zion Church has like 14 million, I mean, has, what is it, 1.4 million members, and I think, I'm just playing the numbers on top of my head, they got 3,000 plus congregations. I showed them how they could raise $1 million just by the 3,000, each of the churches buy a book, and then each of the church, 30 members of each church could buy a book, and they could raise $1 million. Well, that would have to be without the assistance of the president and some other people at that institution. Okay, same thing with Claflin. Now, Claflin's alumni are stepping up, especially now that they're able to go out and say, like I told them, I don't want y'all going out there trying to sell no books while this pandemic is going on. We can wait. And so but they're getting ready to kick some things off, because there is a closer relation between the United Methodist Church and Claflin than the Amy Zion, although the United Methodist has about 7 black churches, plus several schools like Duke University,
mm-hmm,
that are part of their, you know, their connection. But you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Union in the Baptist Church, Shaw in the Baptist Church, and 2 or 3 others, if they could do it like they were tithing, get 10% to buy books, and I'm only pumping this because I've already looked at these numbers. They was, because I've had them say, well, you know, I don't know why you're talking about your book, because we can just give them $100. Well, we have 3 churches here, 3 Amy Zion churches here that have several thousand members. One is a very vibrant, got a relatively young pastor one of the newer churches. And then you got Evans Metropolitan Church here, which is an older church, but Evans is one of the churches that Livingston College grew out of. The people that founded Evans, who helped found Fayetteville State, also helped found Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
Which means they also had a connection with Gola, Amy Zion Church, and Winston-Salem. And when they were looking for a person to help them with founding a high school and later a college in Winston-Salem, they went to Livingston to get Dr. Atkins, who later became the president and founder of Winston-Salem State University. So there is a connection there, but the connection between the actual connection between the schools and between the schools and the churches, and then the churches and the school, it's not nearly what it should be. I mean, you see, Livingston and most others try to keep people like I have a brother and his wife. My late brother and his wife, his late wife, were both Livingston graduates. They never had any kids, or they sent probably 35, 40 kids to school at Livingston. Their ashes are spread all over Livingston's campus. So is their money, because they never had any children. So they took care of people in the family they want to take care of, and then from that point on, they
gave their money to Livingstone. But the mm-hmm. people at Livingstone don't have the kind of vision necessary to do what's necessary to reach those 3,000 plus churches. And so they're glad to get $1,000 from a church, and you know, like Mother Zion up in New York City. You know, Mother Zion probably got like 2,000 or 3,000 members, and $1,000.
I appreciate that you touched on the disconnect with this, because you're right about it. But doesn't it bother you? Doesn't it bother all of you that folks aren't following through, because they see the sense in it? I mean, this whole thing, if I wasn't a church-going person, I would look at it like a susu, which is that old island thing where X number of households save up money and one household gets it one week and mm-hmm. the others chip in the other round until it all goes around. I would think a mentality more like that would be sufficient so they can get themselves up off the ground and gain equal footing.
Mike, when I was talking about terms with Fred, Fred laid it out in terms of the landscape of what the history is about and what the level of participation is. But I'm not depending on churches to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What I was referring to, and Fred mentioned it, it's the mentality of the historical connection with these institutions to hire people
mm-hmm.
who have that same mindset of keeping the institution as an educational institution. Like
okay.
I tell my students, education is a business that sells education. Education is not just a school. It's a
mm-hmm.
and having those kind of people who have vision. Let's look at it. Like Fred said, Duke University got a lot of people connected with religion. All right.
Yep.
I mean Notre Dame, and I mean there's a bunch of schools like that. And I'm saying, if the mentality is in the people that they select to run those institutions, and they ain't got vision, it hampers the growth of the institution that they're attached to. That's what I'm saying.
Another thing to look at is among churches in the Zion Connection today.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, most of their pastors came from Livingstone. That's not
mm-hmm.
the case anymore. The pastor Simon Temple here, 3,000 plus members. That
mm-hmm.
when he took over Simon Temple, it was teetering on falling off a cliff, because a former bishop's son had been pastor there for like 4 or 5 years, and he had either milked it of all he could milk it, or he had run away so many people that nobody wanted to stay. Anyway, having said that, the current pastor is a graduate of St. Aug, ran track there back in the day. He had built this church up to a point where they just moved into their new sanctuary like 5 years ago, because he grew them from a point where they were about to close to a point where they needed new facilities. Well, with a mindset like that, they're still sending $2,000 or $3,000 a year to Livingstone and smiling about it. But at the same time, the downfall of that
That's
is
the lunch money.
They could easily send $25,000 or $30,000 if that's what they want to do, but they won't do it.
This is my concern.
And just to finish that thought.
Mm-hmm.
The school is not requesting anything like that either. They're satisfied to go with that small amount when in actuality, what they should be doing is, okay, come on now, because I know my brother's former church, St. Catherine's in New Rochelle, and then I forget the one over in Mount Vernon that was like a sister church to them, but both of their former pastors are Livingstone graduates. They were there together. And they never thought twice about raising $10,000 to $15,000. This is back in the '70s and '80s.
Because
my brother retired in 1989, and even the church at St. John's in Youngstown, they used to they raised. I know one year they for founders they sent
$5,000-$6,000, and this was a fairly small church.
Yeah.
Here's my concern.
Go on,
I'm sorry, Patrick. Go ahead. Go ahead, Patrick.
Go on, Mike. I'm sorry. I'm right back. Go on.
Okay.
Mike.
Now, here's my concern. The pimp cartel leader Mark Emmert has re-upped for 5 years to hold the NCAA and the rest of the pimps on top. Is going to be pimps up, hose down for at least another 5 years if they have their say in it.
That right.
Now we've got the question of whether or not the kids can get a little bit, not even any of that, just a little bit. So we already know compliance is going to be ahead of the game in trying to put down situations where players can, through NIL, name, image, licensing, can get a little bit of this. And I mean a little bit of this. But even a little bit would be more than
little,
what they're getting
as little
now.
As possible. As little as possible.
Exactly. It's as little as possible. And the HBCUs, on all due respect, have to have a game plan in order to counter this. This ain't so much a battle of checkbooks right now as it is trying to play chess with these cats, like Reggie says, rather than playing checkers.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese checkers at that.
No, hell yeah.
Let me tell you, a school like, I mean, that's it. I mean, Brigham Young, Notre Dame, Duke University. I mean,
yep.
there are schools, you know, who use their particular ecumenical approach in terms of how they want to spread the word. But they're not attached to the school in terms of how it's run, but they bring people with the mentality out of there that's progressive to move the institution or more importantly, to help in terms of assisting the alumni, the givers, and more importantly, the sponsors and corporate sponsors to do certain things for the institution. That's that's been the history I've known about schools in my years down south, and working with people who work with those institutions.
And Patrick, you know, there's another school you can throw in there like that as well. Georgetown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, big time.
That's right.
Ooh, Lord have mercy.
And they did it because basketball. They just did one sport.
Yes.
They did
the
basketball and crushed it. And this is, I guarantee that as we're saying this, it's already been said by the pimp cartel, they've already started whittling at these chances because that's what they do. When the system gives them an inch, they're not going to let them take a yard. They're going to squash this and get the very bare minimum if they have that's allowable by law.
And Mike, check this out, Mike. Now, let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
Now we speak of business. And Mark, let's be real. With what the NC2A is going to do, and has already in bed with, it was his mistress and his home for now. Now it's their lady holding hands in public.
The betting aspect of
these schools and what they're going to do, there's going to be some religious institutions that we can't do that. Oh, really? I bet as much as Notre Dame wants to be at the hierarchy of pastoral of thinking, they're going to take that money, bro. They're going to take that money. You better.
Oh, please.
I know folks. Let me tell you, the biggest marketers in sports, of course, that's why they got the special deal with NBC and nobody ain't got one.
Exactly.
That's what they're going to have to do.
That's exactly what
I'm going to vision, guys. You know, and, you know, folk in line to HBCU schools, you know, we can't do that. That's not the way we – what?
Bullshit.
Please.
Listen, you know, you're talking about, you know, the church connection. But see, the United Methodist Church – I know people that pastor those churches. They're basically required to go to Duke University because that's a approved seminary. So, but then you got Shaw has a seminary. The Livingstone has a seminary, but they're not accredited based on the tenets of the United Methodist Church. Well.
Mm-hmm.
you have people who go to, I forget the name of the one up at Union, but there is a seminary at Virginia Union. And the person everybody would know best out of that seminary would be Dr. Jeremiah Wright.
That's right.
Those kind of connections are there. But the church has been there all the time.
But the biggest issue was the one that the NCAA wiped out with Southern Methodists. When they decided they wanted to buy and get into the game, they got in. They outspent and out-scouted Texas and all these other schools, and they punished them for it. That's what I'm thinking about. That's what I'm waiting on. I want to see an HBCU come in, do the Madam Queen Penny thing, and punish them. Because they'll out these guys and then get the big money.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, mm-hmm. I'm gonna give you the quintessential of religious projection of purity with an education and morality. When this spring they defeated all robbers, defeated my alma mater, and the money that they got from betting, or the exposure that they got from betting around the world, particularly on those sheets. Now, of course, might not have gone directly to the school, but believe me, it had an effect on donors who believe in that university and more importantly, sponsorship attached to that program. That's what you're
doing. Mm-hmm.
Patrick, and again, a couple years ago, Loyola. Ann or Sister whoever anymore on my TV,
Sister Mary Ellison, whatever her name is,
I'm like, all I'm saying is get off my TV, sister. I'm trying to sin, okay? I'm betting on the games with Benny the Finger. And you're gonna try to come on here all pot? Leave us alone.
That's right.
And Mike.
Yep.
Tony, that's what I'm talking about. How many times did you see it in the tournament? And they went to Sweet 16. Give me a break.
Patrick.
Yep.
They made a bobblehead off of this woman.
Praise the Lord and bless the bookie. Praise the Lord and pass the collection plate.
Literally.
Okay, gentlemen, let's be civil here. If we're going to talk about Loyola,
I love it. I love it. Let's be civil.
We need to throw Liberty University under the bus too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, yes,
Lord.
Oh, yes.
For those who don't know. The average person who's getting a degree from Liberty University couldn't tell you where it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's right.
And on their books, they have 100,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah.
I mean,
Virginia Vicksburg is,
taking courses at Liberty University, and they were talking about going up. I said, no, you don't want to go that way. You want to go up. Go to Greensboro, jump on 29 take you straight to Liberty University, take an exit at Campbell Avenue, go across the bridge, hang a left at First Light, and go around the mountain, and you're there.
Mike, I know they're not related, but Liberty, my ass.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, don't forget the former president of Liberty would like to have swinging parties.
All right, I'm thinking, if we're all members of an HBCU, what I'm thinking is what eventually happened when Howard upset those guys. People got to go syndicate. You got to really trust the fact that you can do the do while the odds are still high in your favor and have those upsets generate profit. It's like playing stocks. It's not serious. It's like playing penny stocks. You put your little pennies up and
I'm with you.
It only takes one hit.
I'm with the big money. Forget the penny. Give me the dollar.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Philly,
one
year
is
about the
Benjamin. It's about the Benjamins, right? You ain't got time for George. You ain't got time for George and Abraham. You want to deal with Benjamin.
Tony, the Benjamins and his daddy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. That's the whole point. The attachment to these universities and the underlying aspects of church in some universities, and again the relationship between the HBC. Because I just lent a DVD that I got from PBS on the growth of black colleges, and the guy I lent it to, he said, "I didn't know churches were that involved." I said, "Yeah." I said,
he found out about the Black Wall Street.
Tell that same guy that Kennedy's dead too while he's at it.
And tell me Jimmy Hoffa got killed by the mafia while he had it too.
But there are people like that. But the point is, again, if you don't have vision, you can't attach us to anything. And a lot of these old folks got to get out the way and let the young folks take over, who've been the various aspects of being a
place
to see
the young
what can do it here and they can do it here. Wait, here's the killer. I'll be quiet. How can Liberty University outmark themselves as a university with the athletic program better than North Carolina AT or FLAM or anybody else? Come on,
that's wrong.
It's a matter of vision and effort. They take the effort to do it. And because you know everybody look at them, all them big brick buildings they got up there at Liberty University. They think they're those nice. They think that's real brick. That's the stuff called Hardy plank, which is a veneering. When they built them buildings, on the farm we used to call them Butler buildings, which is a metal building with some veneering around up waist high. And what they did was they came back years later and put this planking above the line where it was. And because of that, what they ended up doing was they look like they got all these very bricked up buildings. And the bricks are not even an inch thick. It's veneering. The paneling that is on is just as thick as the brick is.
But in terms of purpose and honesty and integrity, you gonna take Liberty over Hampton? Hell no, we ain't.
There you go. That's right. That's right. That's where reality sets in, and this is where I fear the NCAA will strike. And I don't mean strike in terms of a walkout. I'm talking about they'll hit them where they live so they can't make any money. Oh, they'll get the name, image, and license thing, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the five families will conspire to keep them off the board. That is why you have to have your own syndicates in the HBCUs to know who can do what to whom and really put it to the test, lay out algorithms, all that shit. Because you may be playing for pennies now, but they will be down
the line.
And it only takes one hit.
I got to stop you there, Mike. Oh, Mike, I got to stop you right there. There's only one problem. When it comes to HBCU's president, there's two headaches they don't need. It's in number one. As long as you don't mess with my money.
He got to wake up.
Hey, the thing is, though, any president will tell you, as long as you don't give me a headache where it affects my money or accreditation, I deal with you, but as soon as athletics mess up and then we got a problem, guess what? Athletics going to get cut. And that's the real talk. Matter of fact, Luke Williams dropped that to me, and one of the presidents told him. And that president, we got three athletic directors that left HBCUs within the last 2 weeks and more leaving. What does that mean? And they've been
I appreciate the dilemma.
And Xavier, those three schools, ADs on left.
But that's why this is so important. If you're not prepared for what the NCAA is ready to do before you even step up to the plate, you've lost the game. They don't give you this. They didn't give this away. I mean,
They fought for it, and when California and other states knuckled under, the NCAA realized, all right, we got a small leak in the dike. We have to shore that shit up. Because we ain't letting these kids make no damn money. They're indentured servants. That's what we feel. That's what we believe. And we want to maintain that attitude for as long as we can.
Yeah, it ain't going to be long, though, because that thing's going to Congress, and Porsche is going to pass.
Yeah.
It's going to pass. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen, there's going to be some growing pains, no doubt, in all of this.
Yeah. But
gentlemen,
but your
I want to get to...
Okay. Go.
Go ahead, Patrick. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just going, Mike. Go on.
I want to get to this last point before we get to final thoughts. You know, yesterday was a year after the murder of George Floyd. I don't really want to ring the bell on this hard, but I do want everybody's vibe on what it's been like for them a year since.
Hell, I mean, every time I see a cop in an tractor trailer, I'm like, oh, fuck, is he going to stop me? And I'm not trying to be funny when I say that.
No. I know.
True.
I read you.
That's
I understand.
True,
yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And
I've read two reports, one of Wall Street Journal and one with New York Times. After the passion of what happened last summer, there's only like 15% to 18% of the money that was supposed to be given to various diversity and programs has been initiated. 15% to 18%.
Yeah,
I'm going. This company's supposed to give $200,000 to open up a something here for jobs. Wait, a lot of folks, James Brown put it best. James Brown put it best when he wrote when he put this song together. It's biblical. It's called "Talking Loud and Saying Nothing."
And saying nothing.
Got that right. Mm-hmm.
Michael, I do not look at police the same way again. What I mean is this. When I was younger, I looked at police as my friend. When I was younger, I would call the police when I was in trouble. Well, guess what? I have second thoughts about me now.
I would think so. I still, from that first year, from that moment it happened, having seen the Eric Garner thing and how they dogpiled on him and whatnot and choked him out, this was different because this was premeditated. As soon as that cocksucker got down on that and got his knee down there, he laid on that motherfucker for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. He knew
the way
he was going to expire.
Yeah.
You can see the smirk on that cocksucker's face. And again, some in certain police departments, they have, as a badge of honor, killing a minority. That they did it and got away with it, that there was a line of duty or he feared for his life. Whatever the fuck the combination of words and excuses are.
Like
Elizabeth out,
City, North Carolina to me. Elizabeth City.
Now, Mike, here's something that was joked. Of the effect of what the George Floyd impact has had on society in reverse. All the information that we got about the incident and how it spread globally, which the Trumps and people like Trumps don't want to deal with. It wasn't just in this country.
Sure.
When it goes globally, that was the difference between the impact of it in the 60s and now 2021.
Yep.
It's global.
I agree.
And it can be seen visually. But here's the impact of that. The impact of when some people have gotten some stuff and, you know, made some medial progress. But at the opposite end is this. The opposite is the GOP, led by that scumbag Mitch McConnell, they actually ban the teaching of slavery in public schools.
That's right. Yep. I saw that.
That's the opposite. That's an effect. So
you know,
just like in Tulsa, for 80 years they know about it, they don't even want you to know about it so you can think about this. So that's what we're finding. That's one end to the other.
When the game gets forced back one step, they push two steps forward once they gather their footing. And that's what all this is about. You know, I can't say after seeing that that the prosecutor, although he got the guilty verdict, the prosecutor should have called this premeditated murder, because he knew as soon as he got down there what he wanted to do. What is he, 5'7" or something like that? He's one of those little Napoleonic little dick motherfuckers. And he could take to heart that his comrades would pat him on the back because he took down a big black buck, just as if he were hunting out in one of those 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. That's what I saw. That's what I felt. And God bless that little girl who kept the video going. I was fearing for her life more than anybody's, because
yes, true.
I thought they would do some
big damage. She's got mental problems now.
I don't blame her.
I'd move out of Minnesota to another state where she can really relax and get a different life from there. That's what I do.
No question.
That's what I do, big time.
If I was that girl, I would pack my bags and go to Jamaica, or go to Bahamas, or go to Africa. I would be here. I would not be in the United States.
The kind of thing that would make one move.
Because she is a target now. Before, I bet you, I'm telling you that she's going to end up dead. She's going to end up dead somewhere.
Well, her people had to know she was a target, guys. Yeah, no, they knew. They knew she was a target because they had the spotlight on her at that time. Fortunately, there were people around who obviously were protecting her, because if they could have gone after her or her family and taken that camera away, they sure as shit would have.
Right.
So this was totally different because of the fact that this wasn't the 60s where we saw the hoses and dogs and whatnot and people screaming the whole world watching when they really weren't. This, you could click on a motherfucking mouse and see everything over and over and over again. This is the true situation where the whole world was watching. That's why the feedback was so intense.
And also brought out some of these systemic problems in other parts of the world where this is a problem also.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
so folks in England, they went crazy.
It's true. You know, they say karma might be late sometimes, but she never misses an appointment. And we know she's got a long-standing appointment.
I'm going to be real. I'm going to be real here. Real here. United States is in trouble. You know why they're in trouble?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they're in trouble is this. England saw what we did.
That's right.
And Japan saw what we did.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Germany saw what we did.
Mm-hmm.
One of the few
things
that
said, hey, we can have this. We can have this. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because Uncle John J. Trump did what he did. He got away with it, but guess what? He is no longer the president of the United States. Therefore, his ass is going to jail.
Well, he'll go to jail soon enough because Letitia James is in that ass.
I believe it when I see it.
I'll say this.
I believe it when I see it.
That's true, too. I'll say this. If you got grand jury, uh-oh. That's all I can say.
That's right.
That's right.
I'll take grand juries for 1,000, Alex.
A certain case down in Florida where this guy used force on a teenager, and what happened, we just knew the evidence was there, and this bastard got off and then tried to sue
him. I remember that,
Reggie.
This is a Shakespeare play, I'm sorry, man. This is a Shakespeare play, a tragedy at the end, and we're the ones that end up with the tragedy.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I want to get the final thoughts because, Reggie, I think you really struck a chord there. You know, What's it going to be like when we see the same shit and nobody does anything about it? What's it going to be like when we see the same shit and everybody else makes a lot of noise, like you think, talking loud, but nobody says anything significant that would lead to action?
Yeah.
So Reggie, go first, please.
You know, the sad thing about this, that Biden and the Vice President, who Kamala Harris, said, there's no racism. You know, you guys just imagining things. Just like when Obama, when he was president, he couldn't even utter the word white supremacy and racism. Oh, no. You can't say that. And I would say the same thing I said before. Here in Virginia, we got Justin Fairfax, who Miss Lucas of Tidewater was looking at felony charges. We fast forward that thing about 3 months later. Here she is on TV, and I quote, I called the snake oil salesman to come up here and be president, Terry McCullough, be governor of Virginia. And I support him 100%, but Terry McCullough was nowhere around your black ass looking at felony charges. You say we want strong black men, strong black politicians. Well, guess what? We got one that stood up here, and the Negroes are turning their back on them. I don't want to hear a damn thing about the NAACP, Congressional Black Caucus, or Black Democrats. Just my black ass. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The church say amen.
Mike, you there?
Damn, I didn't mean to shut everything down.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shut it down. I'm sorry.
Drop the mic.
I'm having some production problems. Okay. Fred, your turn, brother.
Well, since y'all discussed all this stuff to the max, there's not a lot left, I guess. But, you know, as we progress with it, you know, we're getting ready to – well, first of all, let me tell you this. In case you didn't know, Mr. Moore, Eric Moore, he suffered a fall a few days ago, so he's in the hospital. So keep him in your prayers, because he's the man that had HBCUs online before most of them were online. And I just leave it at that. You know, we were talking earlier about what has changed our emotion feeling. Well, I've been one of those guys who got pulled over by cops. One guy pulled me over 3 times for the same thing, and by the third time, I had this letter from the state that I showed his, because I didn't bother with him. I took it down to the police department, and I told him he needed to get him off my ass because I was tired of him harassing me. And they said, "Well, what's the problem?" I said, "Here's the problem. He don't know his colors." And it had to do with the you know how the date tags on your license plates. He said I should have one color, and since I didn't have a color that satisfied him, then I was wrong. So as you know, he ended up being on somebody else's police force now, I guess, but he's not here anymore. But I say, you know, sometimes you got to do your due diligence. And as sure. So far as we were talking about earlier, you know, I'm going to keep working on this with these schools as well as the churches that these schools are connected to, because if they were to reconnect, you're talking about a gold mine for both of them. Because see, we got the United Methodist Church is different from most of them of the other denominations, because United Methodist is actually a very integrated denomination, but then the other Methodists are predominantly black. And then the Baptists, you got your Southern Baptists and whatnot, but then there's also
not them. Not
but
them.
They do need to become, you're talking about millions and millions of individuals, thousands of congregations, and there has to be some happy medium there somewhere where those two meet, and it becomes beneficial to the schools as well as the churches, because you got churches who need places to send some of their kids. And why aren't Baptist churches sending kids to Shaw University like they used to? Why aren't Methodist churches sending black kids to Livingston like they used to? So you know, that's what needs to happen, and that's part of what I'm working on. Because I've been in touch with some kids from St. Catherine's in New Rochelle who went to at Livingston when I was there. So when I was in school, so, you know, all they need to do is just connect and go on. You know, there's ways to help them get it. But the other thing is to get the money flowing, like Livingston and Claflin and all the other HBCUs that, that needs to be flowing. To connect with me, just go to www.blackheritagereview.com. You can buy all the books if you want. And so, and thanks for the love, bro.
There you go. www.blackheritagereview.com. Books, thoughts, concepts. Reading is fundamental. Patrick, come on.
Years ago, you know, presently we have UFC, which is now a phenomenon. As a matter of fact, about 20 years ago, when this was beginning to break out, somebody wanted me to work with them. I said, man, that sport's too brutal. Too brutal. Brutal. I can't talk about that. Was I wrong? But but it's on all the time, and everybody's into it. Well, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that was the way people thought about track in this country. You had track on every weekend, man, doing something.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's right.
During that time, you know, if they came to the 68 Olympics and the 72 Olympics, one of the premier runners of all time, the man who went 44 seconds at 4:40, Lee Evans. Lee Evans passed recently.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And he was in Nigeria. As a matter of fact, they were putting money together to fly him back to the United States to deal with his illness. Unfortunately, he never made it. In the days when, like I said, when track was predominant in our neighborhoods and across the country, I loved to see Lee Evans run and John Carlos and the brothers every weekend. It was good to see. He passed. And he is a man that established the first one to run under 4:40 went under 44 seconds. I mean, that's phenomenal that you can do that. So peace and blessings to his family. And it's something really that we should get back. And I'll close with this. Some of our kids in our neighborhoods need to get real. Because we believe that we have this athletic edge. These white kids ain't playing.
Yeah.
Like I can tell you.
They know.
We're training.
It's more than the sport. That's right.
With training programs they're going to, you know, we know they're more athletic, but we can out-train them.
Exactly.
Making a difference.
It's food for thought for sure. Thank you, Patrick. Gary, throw something in this pot.
Major League Baseball is doing it again. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, today the Oakland A's are playing the Seattle Mariners. The Oakland A's wore their old 1973 green jerseys.
Wow, I like those jerseys too.
Yeah, I love
the
those
Seattle
too.
Mariners wore their 1990 Mariner uniform. Baseball, see, they have other rules, right? They have all the other rules, right? Victoria rules doesn't understand. Why do you have two teams with the similar colors on the same damn field? This should not be allowed. I'm sorry. The home teams are wearing either light colors or white uniforms. Enough of this. You have the St. Louis Cardinals wearing red at home. Are you kidding me? This has to stop. This has to stop. And we all know why they're doing it. It's because they're selling jerseys.
There you go.
I'm sick and tired of this. Today, I was like, oh, I can't believe this. I had to look and see who was who, okay?
Yep.
You got that right.
Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah.
Here we go. 1 o'clock. It will be my 1,000th show.
Yay! Yes, indeed. Good stuff, G. 1,000 shows. 1,000 episodes.
Congratulations.
Much respect, G. You work hard at this. We love you for it. Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific, the 1,000th episode of The Gray Leopard Cove. T-Mac? T-Mac, are you there?
He's probably celebrating.
Wait. He went for that sandwich.
Sandwich is probably celebrating the Knicks won the game. That's why. hey,
he's playing Return of the Mac. Hey, the Knicks won tonight, so you're having a Knicks burger.
Oh, there you
you're
go.
About right.
I'm with
you're
that.
You're about right, Rich.
Oh, New York, right. Go, New York, yeah. Go.
Did they win, Tony?
Yes, they won.
He's speaking to the media.
Now he can die in peace. Yes. Okay.
Why is New York happy? Because New York needs one.
Well, as Tony's handling the press conference there, we want everybody to know that we have reached the final week of the Big Bang Tournament. We have 4 fantastic shows this week, starting tomorrow into
dropping.
Sunday. Tomorrow, Luther Vandross and James Brown will go at it.
Oh, that's
what?
Come on, y'all. Come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Man. Yes.
Jeez.
Billy Paul.
Please.
Billy Paul and Ronnie Isley, Mr. Biggs, will go at it on Friday.
And
then we have a wicked doubleheader on Sunday. Tell them who you got Sunday, G.
I can't get excited.
Marvin Gaye versus Marvin Jr. Finish up Sunday night with a battle for Stax Records. Otis Redding versus Isaac Hayes.
All right, now
we'll have our final 4. Tony, are you finished handling
with
the citizenry?
No, he said he's still watching the Knicks, man. Watch the press conference.
Okay.
Well, he's watching the
we
rerun.
Shall let him carry
he's
on.
Been over for an hour.
we will see Tony later.
Mike got to realize he's been waiting 8 years for the season playoffs.
This
now,
is
so gotta,
true.
You got to give him a break.
Well, we will give him a break as Tony searches for his soul.
He's hear that organ playing defense. For
we shall carry on. We'll see you tomorrow night at 9 as the big tournament reaches its climax for all of us here. Thank the chefs. Everybody, please go safe, stay safe, be safe.
Yes,
wash your hands. Wash your ass because it ain't gone yet. Wear a mask. Fuck what that asshole from the Buffalo Bills says. Wear a mask and watch your back.
And the New York Jets. Don't get the quarterback for the Jets. And his mama.
No kidding.
And his mama, yeah. believe me, I'll be tracking that story this year.
My production assistant, here she is. Thank you, Lanolin.
Love.
Once I was happy, I was alive with the spirit of life's beauty and then it was good. Watching life is taking me, something in me die. Every day is a struggle for my spirit to survive. How I lost the will to be, cause my soul simply crept outside of me. Somebody tell me where to go. Thought it was shame, but now I know. In life and empty space, you know. If you just need to send it home, I tried to be strong, but if happiness is coming, I hope I have a vision to see.
I'm so heavy hearted, I got Philly blues. Lately I can't even bring myself to what I do. Oh, I feel the weight of all the world is resting on the shoulders of this girl. Somebody tell me where to go. I thought it pain, now I don't. Well, it left an empty space, you know. If you see it, send it home. Every time one of us goes down, like I'm looking at my own blood on the ground. Seems like everybody lost their mind, and I just might be the next one in line. Somebody tell me where to go. Thought it was pain, but now I don't. No, I don't. Left it at this place, you know. And if you see it, send it home.
There you go. Don't forget the Big Bag Tournament starting tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern, as James Brown and Luther Vandross go at it. Friday evening, Marvin Gaye and Marvin Jr. Sunday, doubleheader. Gary leads off with Ronnie Isley against Billy Paul. And then we go for the Battle of Stax Records. It's Otis Redding. We go against Isaac Hayes. For all of us here at the tree, go safe, stay safe, be safe. Good night.